Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and God bless, depending on where you are in the world. Welcome to The Woman at the Well, Season 3, moderated by Beverly Black. That would be me, and I am the creator of The Woman at the Well on Tribe Family Channel. This Season 3 episode is brought to you exclusively by Genius is Common, and I am set to have a wonderful conversation with Dr. Yvonne Sion. Let me tell you a bit about Dr. Yvonne Sion for those of you who may not be familiar, and I'll be reading her bio from the website The History Makers, the nation's largest African-American video oral history collection, and her profile is under Education Makers. So, Dr. Yvonne Sion, born in Washington, D.C. on December 20th, Yvonne Sion graduated as salutatorian of her class at Paul Lawrence Dunbar High School in Washington, D.C. Sion received a B.A. with honors from Allegheny College in 1959. If I'm mispronouncing anything, she will graciously correct me, and I look forward to that. She attended the American University as a Woodrow Wilson Fellow, and in 1960 earned her M.A. in political science. That same year, she met Patrice Lumumba, leader of the newly independent Congo, on his only visit to the United States. The dynamic African leader offered Sion a job in his new government. Proficient in French with a keen interest in Africa, Sion accepted and served as secretary of the Inga Dam Project for 2 years. She also served in a State Department delegation to a UNESCO conference in Paris. In 1966, Sion attended the first African Festival of the Arts held in Dakar, Senegal. While in school at Union Graduate School, Sion became the first director of the Bolinga Black Cultural Resource Center at Wright State University. She returned to Washington, D.C. in 1972 to work for Congressman Howard Diggs. She became one of the first contributors to AFRICARE, an American-based aid organization to Africa. By 77, Sion was the first woman to serve on AFRICARE's board of directors, and in 2002, she became its first vice chairwoman. When still a graduate student, Sion was drawn to the Unitarian Universalist Church and was later ordained as a minister. Sion currently works as an associate professor of history at Prince George's Community College in Largo, Maryland, and resides in Maryland. So, ladies and gentlemen, I can't even tell you what a privilege, honor, and pleasure this conversation is going to be for me. Dr. Yvonne, welcome to The Woman at the Well. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well. Thank you so much, Ms. Jackson. I had, Ms. Black, I had to retire. I retired from Prince George's Community College some years ago, so I'm in my retirement for a while. I started working again at Wilberforce University, teaching part-time just this past year, but I think I've retired again from that as of the end of the semester.
Oh, my goodness, my goodness. I understand. You know, I have several educators in my network. They've either befriended me or they have been editors for, you know, some of my publications. So it amazes me how the level of dedication that you have, but then at the same time, it's like, okay, can't wait for spring break, can't wait for summer. You know, you're raising America's children, so we understand. So it's above and beyond raising your own children at home. Now you've got everybody's kids. So I'm glad to hear that update. History Makers would do well to have you back there so you can continue to update them as to everything that you've been doing. I'm fascinated by your story. I saw a YouTube video where you were addressing women of faith. As you know from our previous conversations, my faith has come under, I won't say fire, I'll say under, on the fence, so to speak. I found myself on the fence of faith, and so I welcome.
You've been questioning.
Yeah, and I have.
Meaning of faith is that you have gone through a period of questioning and found some answers that you are willing to live with. So, yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I really want to thank, before we even get started on that, I want to thank Mr. Howard Wright for our introduction and connection and for his time that he has spent helping me sort through that faith that I am questioning, because I had him on the show last week, and I'll have him on our sister station again this Friday to wrap up the three-part series on Malcolm X as he drops his trilogy, being a historian about Malcolm X. So, again, I want to thank him. Thank you. Thank you. You know, God. And again, I saw this video on YouTube that you were speaking before Women of Faith. So again, I'm honored that you would be able to share here with me. And we have our bullet points, and, you know, as candidly as you would like to be, as transparent and as in-depth as you would like to take the liberty of, I would like to pose these questions and have your answers. And I thank you again.
Well, I'm honored as well.
Thank you. And we're going to actually cover three areas on this season of The Woman at the Well. I have many people lined up on this season, so about every other Monday, and we may be adding Tuesdays, I will have a group of empowering women. And so I want to, again, welcome Dr. Yvonne Sion to The Woman at the Well, kicking off, again, Season 3 here live on Tribe Family Channel. We will be discussing faith, business, and health and wellness. So here we are with faith. Dr. Yvonne, what does faith mean to you?
As I see it, faith is confidence in our understanding of the meaning of ultimate reality or God. So that's what faith is. It's that which we, the way in which we understand God, the way in which we understand ultimate reality, and that understanding is like a grounding for us. It's the thing that holds us up. It's like a foundation that keeps us moving and keeps us standing, especially when things go wrong.
So, wow. Indeed. When did you choose your faith, and why, if you would expound?
That's an interesting question. When I was 3 years old, I had a very serious illness that nearly ended my life. And I, for the first time in my life, I was in a hospital. Well, actually, the second time, first being when I was born. I was in the hospital for an extended period in an isolation ward because I had double pneumonia and chicken pox and measles all at the same time. And so I couldn't handle any more germs. So they had me in an isolation ward. That meant I couldn't see my parents either, and I needed them more than anything. So I think that's when I found something to lean on. I think that was when I found my understanding of God. And when I, shortly after I got well and came home from that hospital stay, I went on a walk with my father, and I looked at him and I said, "Daddy, is there such thing as God?" And my father was an agnostic. So he gave me an answer which was neither yes nor no. And I had to kind of figure out for myself, am I going to believe in God? Since he hadn't closed the door to that, I decided that was when I chose, that was really the choice, the time of choice for me. I chose to believe in God as a conscious choice. And the why was because I had survived. I knew there had to be a God.
Okay, now, he left the door open for you.
Mm-hmm.
That is phenomenal, being agnostic.
He explained
so
to
he
me,
did
he
not,
said, I don't know that there is a God. I don't know if there is or there is not. He said,
mm-hmm.
I'm not an atheist. I don't
mm-hmm.
know whether to believe in God or not. But he, as I said, he knew that he did not want to put me in a situation where I had to make a choice at that time not to believe in God or to feel that I had to follow his path. He left it open
absolutely.
For me to make a choice.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were not long out of the hospital. Praise God for your healing with, those struggles to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
You're on a walk with your dad. You are how old? You're still three now?
I was still three, I believe, and not much older.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew how important it was to allow you to grow into your faith, your belief, and your understanding. He knew how important it was at that early stage of your life for you to have to be asking something that deep, having come from, the hospital, the isolation.
Near death, that's correct. Yes.
Near death.
Mm-hmm.
He did not interfere with what you as you're still a baby basically, and he did not intercede with what God may have dealt with you.
I was perhaps a precocious child, but I was a child. Now I have to add here that, like all children and all young people, we are guided to a religious belief or a religious institution. And but my mother was not a church-going person. My grandmother was, and so my church's experience was with her in a Pentecostal church when I went to visit her. I spent summers with her often. But at the same time, I don't remember spending a lot of time in church except for that one time I went. I was baptized as an Episcopalian. In my infancy, or christened as an Episcopalian in my infancy. But, of course, I was too young to remember that. And I did go from time to time to the Episcopal Church with other family or other relatives. So I did not have a lot of church experience. My faith system was put into place by being around my grandmother and I'd have to say the questioning that goes on in one's heart and soul when we are young. And
wow. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that was how I came to the place where I was at 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so much in common. My summers were spent with my grandmother. she was my introduction to God.
Mm-hmm.
Much like I would say most people were born into the faith of our foremothers and fathers.
It is correct.
It's handed down. So when I started questioning, you know, I've read the Bible from cover to cover.
Mm-hmm.
God gave me the woman at the well. He gave me the men at the well. I have questions as to whether the woman at the well really exists. And if she did not, then here she is now. I'm still delving into much of what I call my awakening season. This is a huge awakening era for me because of my faith being on the fence and because of what beliefs are now being shaped by what I know unequivocally to be false, religious and religion-wise, and what I know to be unequivocally true based
mm-hmm.
on my own experiences and life as a child being brought up, not going to church a lot, but praying and emulating my grandmother and then going through life's experiences very early on and coming into a relationship with God for myself before I even could, you know, read a Bible. So the Bible in itself holds many things that I question, scripture and parables and commands and postures and deity that I question. And I think you may have answered what single moment in your life most greatly challenged your faith when you say that you were hospitalized, overcoming the illnesses that you overcame, and then that opening the channel to your faith. But would you have another answer to that question, or would that have addressed that?
I think, you know, you grow and as you grow and learn mm-hmm. and enlarge your perspective, you have mm-hmm. to have challenges to your faith. There're going to be challenges to your faith, or it's not faith. There are going to be those times when you raise additional questions because you don't answer them all with that first understanding of God is. That's the big answer. But there are going to be other instances where there are smaller, if you will, smaller answers to the question, other times when you are questioning your life, your meaning. Because the big thing about faith is that it has to do with meaning. And there are going to be lots of times when you say to yourself, well, what did that mean? Why did I have to go through this experience or that particular experience? And I think if there's one moment that stands out of that kind of questioning of faith, it was when I was in college. And, of course, in college you question everything, including faith, and everyone around you is doing likewise. And I remember a group of us had gotten into a conversation with a young girl who was Catholic and took everything on faith. And I think the attempt was to try to talk to her about using reason to get to faith. She was questioning her faith, and we were questioning her faith, and we were questioning whether or not it was rational or reasonable. And at the end of that, she was distraught, and within a year, she committed suicide. That was the moment when I began to, when I had my first real serious faith challenge. I think I don't recall ever questioning that there is a God or that God mm-hmm. is the source of our being and the source of our moving in the direction of meaning, if that is what we do. I don't think I ever questioned that. I don't remember questioning that. But on the occasion of her suicide, it made me realize how important it is for each of us to have a faith and how irresponsible it is to deprive anyone of their faith by pushing them, pushing against their sense of what God is.
That is, and that's the liberty that your father allowed that day walking. He did not hamper your relationship in knowing, you know, knowing whether, you know, God exists, and
that is correct.
You know,
he did not
that
question
path
me.
Of your faith.
He did not question me on it. He did not tell me what God is. He allowed me to figure it out for himself. He did not ask me what my conclusions were. He allowed me to live them.
I have to agree with you about having a strong sense of faith and knowing God in one's life when it comes to people committing suicide, you know, not knowing that their life is a gift given and it's of immense value to the Creator, to the Creator. We're not up against man's judgments and values over our life, because we need to shut that noise out and understand that, yes, we have to understand that we are here through a gift, and that gift is very divine. My heart goes out to anyone that has shortened their gift of life. My brother shortened his gift of life.
Mm-hmm.
Most recently in the news, an 8-year-old shortened his gift of life.
Yes,
so
I
want to
seeing that.
And I think that
speaks to the question, your next question, which is how important is spiritual wellness? My response to that is that very often spiritual wellness is a matter of survival. It's a matter of life and death. And I think that my friend suicide kind of illustrated that. When she had no faith, when she had no sense of her relationship to God, she was deprived of her sense of meaning. And because she had no sense of meaning in life, she decided to end it. That helps me to understand how important it is to have a sense of God in your life, to have a sense that you have a place in God, that you are part of God. And if you lack that, you may lack that sense of why your life is important.
Indeed, so, indeed, indeed. And, you know, my brother didn't have any children. Oftentimes, you know, people, whether they have children or not, when they come to that point in their mind, you know, to make that decision to shorten their gift of life, you know, it's even sadder both ways. It's sad one way or the other. It's sad when there were no offspring to carry on. It's sad when there were offspring. It's sad that the life, you know, the person's life ended so short. All the potential, you know, that the world will never see and know of that person's beauty and giftings. I recently found myself on the fence of my faith, which prompted deeper study in God's Word. What books would you recommend for people to find their chosen path?
I think that when we are on the path itself goes past the things that we need. In other words, the books will find you. The books that you need will find you. The Bible will be there. If it's the Quran will become available to you. You will find these things because the path itself will lead you to them. If that makes any sense.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. You know, we could even go as far as to say our steps are ordered.
Yes.
And creation will meet you where you step, basically, on that path. So thank you for letting our listeners know that it's, you know, you can still take the deeper study into the Word and discern for yourself whether you are reading the Holy Bible, the King James Version, or whether you are reading the Quran. And then I would like to offer what has been chosen in my path for deeper study, because I started questioning so much about the Bible, the Holy Bible, the King James Version. You know, even to say the King James Version made me feel, okay, well, where's the other versions then?
I've read several versions.
So that opened doors.
Yes.
Yeah, that opened
different
all kinds of a translation. But then when I come upon the questions would be when things don't make sense, when cognitively my mind cannot connect what I'm reading to what can actually be viable and carried out in our human form. Or
one of the things, Beverly, that we have to understand as we read the Bible is that the Bible is a book written hundreds, thousands of years ago even, about people whose experiences are different from our own. And since our understandings of God are based on our personal experiences for the most part, when we read someone else's experience in another time, in another place, another cultural milieu, they may not make sense to us because we didn't live that culture. We didn't live those experiences, and we can't understand them. So that's part of why the Bible may not on occasion make sense to us. But you mentioned that you had found a book that helped you to get through some of that.
Well, I just like you said, you know, your path will lead you to, you know, the answers. And so my study broadened and deepened, and those answers have been coming to me by way of, you know, in this digital age, you can pull up things on the internet. And so I've been going into deeper studies in as far as the lost book of the Bible, the lost book of Enoch. I've been listening to, because of my interviews with the man that introduced you and I, Mr. Howard Wright, and he being a historian on Malcolm X. I've been listening to videos of Malcolm X, Elijah Muhammad, and then I will be going deeper into what I can find as far as, you know, actual oration from Farad Muhammad, if available. So my path and my course of study is just leading me deeper and deeper. I'm currently reading about the Kemet Bible, the Ethiopian Bible. So you're right, your path will bring you to that knowledge and understanding, and what you're thirsting for as your faith and knowledge broadens. And then, you know, historically, when you look at the world and look at history, you know, that in itself, and looking at the people and the ethnicities of the world, that in itself will start to also broaden your scope, because now you're looking at, like you said, you know, people from different times, different cultures, and their beliefs and their faith, and then history in itself. So that's what has helped me. I'm going to go to the third section, health and wellness, and then round up. I'm going to change the order. And because we honor those that we've lost, not only to suicide, but with health and wellness, I want to also say that this show is dedicated to colon cancer awareness and those that we've lost along the way. And we're going to pause for a moment of silence for them. As we reflect upon those that we've lost along the way, I would like our listeners to be on the lookout for a organization that is going to come out of the birthing of recognizing cancer awareness, specifically for someone that has gone home 1 year ago today, and that organization will be facilitated through Gumbo for the Soul Literacy Program to heighten health and awareness, education, and community philanthropy. It is called Unity Advocacy, Inc., YAI, and the pronunciation will simply be Y. And we're going to be launching that this week. I make that announcement here on this show as we honor the first anniversary of Y's home going. And for this segment of health and wellness, what would you say is or what do you do, Dr. Yvonne, to stay on course health-wise? Tell our listeners, you know, what's some of the things that keeps you going, whether, you know, they were passed on by your grandmother, whether it's something that you adapted to, but what is your mantra for health and wellness?
Basically, diet and exercise are key, as I see it. And in terms of my mental well-being, I try to keep my mind active, and exercise helps with that as well, because that circulation of blood through the body helps to keep those. In my case, I have you get a place to the place where things start hardening, the arteries and whatnot start hardening, and exercise helps because the blood keeps flowing. And diet, of course, in terms of not eating things, eating things that will help to enhance your well-being, fresh fruits and vegetables being the main thing.
And those are absolutely, by far, simple ways to really enhance our overall health, because fruit and vegetables are rich in nutrients. It is a live health source. And so we have to become more aware and cognizant of attaining, you know, a higher level of nutrition by, you know, shunning away from food sources that, you know, if it's not alive, it's you know, it's something that may be manufactured, and
we don't
know secondary.
What it is manufactured. We don't always know what the ingredients are, but in that fresh fruits and vegetables, lots of greens. Green vegetables are very important. They provide fiber, and that helps to keep your colon cleansed. And I think a clean colon is part of staying healthy for a long time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you mentioned the hardening of the arteries is preventable by, you know, exercise and movement. And, you know, we underestimate that point right there. So I am very glad that you make that point. Why we don't think about our veins. We do not think about our veins at all. The very thing that carries our blood throughout our body, we don't think about it. We don't think about our veins.
And there's a reason that we call blood the lifeline, or blood is the source of our life, and so we want to keep it healthy. We want to be sure that it's clean and healthy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, for our listeners that are just tuning in, this is Beverly Black. We are on The Woman at the Well, and I'm speaking with Dr. Yvonne Sion, and we're having a discussion on spirituality, health and wellness, and we don't want to negate in that health and wellness that it is very important to have spiritual wellness, physical wellness, mental wellness. We talked about people not having that sense of faith and suicide, you know, being one of the way outs or, you know, that people are taking. So we definitely want to promote national suicide prevention. There is a number that people can call. It's 1-800-273-8255. And we also want to encourage anyone to broaden their knowledge base when it comes to breast, cervical, and colon health, because these are some elements that women deal with. And you can, you know, Google and, you know, get information, breast screening guidelines such as mammograms and clinical breast exams. You can do things to prevent cervical cancer by getting pap test screenings every 3 years. I'm not going to recommend vaccines or anything like that, but they do have those available. They offer them to females and to males between the ages of 9 and 26 to prevent the HPV infection and cervical cancer. I did not elect to have that for my daughter, nor did I receive that, but it is available. And then, you know, to prevent and the early detection of colon cancer, they are recommending starting at age 50 that you have a fecal occult blood test, FOBT, lab work, and then colonoscopies. They recommend that every 10 years. So do your own due diligence and homework, listeners, for your health and wellness. And meanwhile, I will do my best to bring you relevant and rife content along those lines. So that is the business.
I just want to underscore the importance of regular examinations, even self-exams on the breast, for example. That was how I came to discover that I had breast cancer, and I'm a 10-year survivor as of this year.
Ooh, congratulations.
Yes.
OMG, congratulations. Wow. Well, we will definitely want to honor your story in our upcoming edition of Gumbo for the Soul, Women of Honor 2. Our first book, Gumbo for the Soul, Women of Honor, special pink edition, was all about you know, the stories, it's an anthology, so stories of survivorship, of prevention, and,
yes,
you know, just like you said right there, you know, early detection and prevention. So, wow, congratulations. Now, speaking of, you know, overcoming, overall, what would you say attributes to, you know, maintaining that health? Again, you know, like what are some of the things that you do to ensure that you're maintaining and monitoring yourself?
I get regular exams from my health professional. That's it. That's given. But I think there's nothing more important than paying attention. You know your body better than anybody else does. And you can tell by the way that you're feeling sometimes that something is wrong. And that was what led me to the hospital and to the test that helped me to discover the lump in my breast and breast cancer. Around the same time, I didn't feel the lump initially, and I started paying attention and going to get checkups and see what was happening. Before the lump actually became apparent, but I think that I knew something was wrong, and before the doctors did, and I detected the lump. That was my first sign of something being wrong, and then I had it diagnosed retroactively, or in later it was diagnosed. But I think in terms of keeping healthy, it's important to keep moving, and it's important to keep your mind occupied or your mind active. And prayer is important. We can't underestimate the power of prayer either.
Absolutely, absolutely indeed. I believe wholeheartedly that prayer works. It is effective. And that is what it's about. It's about whatever you do, make sure that it's effective. Effective faith, effective prayer, effective health management, effective spiritual health. You know, just as long as whatever we lend our attention and our time to, that it is absolutely effective and that it produces results, because there is nothing like wasting time, being idle, being nonchalant about critical things that we need to pay more attention to and then acting upon them. And so we have to do the things that are going to be effective for our own health, wellness, and basic needs in life. And that is not to negate business. Congratulations on your imminent retirement. I hope the school's not listening, because they probably would have heard it first here. She's about to say peace out, y'all.
No, when they were getting ready to put people into classrooms for next year, mm-hmm, I said, "No, I think I'm through this time."
Yeah, I think I'm gonna take my summer vacation and chill the rest of the duration is a summer vacation, right?
But
well,
I did want to mention something. When you talk about things that keep you well, family is so important. And having family around you is very important. And I have found, in terms of what I do to stay healthy, keeping engaged with my grandchildren is about one of the best things, children and grandchildren, one of the best things you can do. Just keeping engaged, as you said, keeping engaged. And they are what helps to connect you to what's going on and helps to remind you of what's important, because when they start talking about history and you say to yourself, oh, I lived through that, and then you tell them about it, that has a lot of meaning for them and for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I knew that you had one son, but a little birdie told me that you had two sons. The birdie would be the one who introduced us again, Mr. Howard, right? He says, well, you know, she has two sons. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, and you know how very close everyone is.
I have two sons and a daughter. Yes, my daughter.
And a daughter.
She is the oldest.
Oh, okay.
She's
well,
helped to raise
out.
All of us.
Wow. Happy Mother's Day to you. Shout out to all three of your mini-me's. And, you know, you are so absolutely right. Grandchildren, I heard a joke way back. I don't know if it was a comic that I read or what, but it said the reason grandparents and grandchildren are so close is because they have the same enemy. You know, because the parent is the one who eventually our children tell us what to do, and they're telling their children what to do. So the grandparents get together with the grandchildren in cahoots against the kids. And
is,
it was just so cute.
True.
It was just so cute. You know, I thought, well, you know, I mean, you can't go wrong when you have, you know, you're in cahoots with your grandchild because, you know, you have that telepathy. Well, we're certainly not going to do what, you know, the parents said, right?
Well, what I found, too, is that the children sometimes at the beginning of life, we're at the height of our mental and spiritual powers in childhood, and I think that's another reason that grandparents and children are close. They
wow.
The grandparents recognize that in the children and the grandchildren.
Wow, it's sort of like where we meet, wisdom and spirituality, because I do believe that children are closer to God. And so, and then as we grow
that's
in our
point.
Faith, and yeah, I believe
that's
that.
A good point.
They're
you're
so
probably
innocent.
Right. Yes, yes.
You know.
A very good point.
Now, how do you stay above the fray? You have so much going on. You have been – talk about some of your world travels. I know that's not on there, but we're going to transition into business. And
mm-hmm.
from your bio, you know, I think your bio is just fascinating. You know, I've always said, oh, the festival in Africa, I was attracted to that. Being so involved with Africare. You know, tell us about that experience. Expound in liberty from one to the other as you so please, and then I'll go back to the three bullet points on business.
Well, you talk about being above the fray, and one of the first experiences I had as an adult was to be offered a chance to work in the Congo, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which at that time was in the middle of a civil war maybe just beginning to come out of a civil war, but I don't think that the war was fully over when I was there in the 1960s. How did I stay above the fray? I recognized at that time that it was important not to take sides. It was important to listen, and that's an important part of staying above the fray. You have to listen and understand other people's points of view to understand why they are doing what they do or why they believe they are doing what they do. So when I was in that civil war, I did a lot of listening, but I have to also say that there are times, as in any conflict, even those conflicts within yourself, there are times when you don't manage to really stay above the fray. You're in it, and you're definitely in it in one way or another. So during the time that the war was going on in the Congo, for example, I talked to everybody. I listened to everybody and their points of view. What you do about that is the hard part. I think you have to give people an opportunity to feel that they are making a contribution, that their thoughts and feelings and deeds mean something beyond themselves. And I think to the extent that we can help to transform the meaning in a person's life to something beyond oneself, that they can see in perspective that their life has a larger meaning, that to that extent you're able to not exactly stay above the fray, but you're able to keep the fray from controlling your life.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Now, my daughter, her employer, were going to Africa last year, and I would not allow my daughter to go. That was the end of her employment. Her employer was in Maryland, natives of Ghana, and from their disposition and demeanor as to how their business and personal lives were being conducted here in America, I felt that my daughter would not be viewed upon in the best light as a African-American in Africa because of the demeanor of the employers here. How did you, or did you encounter, like, because if you're already there and it's a civil war going on, but did you feel any indifference coming from America, being in Africa, from our native Africans?
It's interesting that you ask that, because I remember one day I had an opportunity to go outside of the capital city and into the countryside, and I met some ladies in the countryside. And I have to tell you that they were so excited to meet me as a black American. They thought I was European. They started out saying, oh, you're European. And I kept saying, no, I'm black. And then they put their arm against mine, and they said, yes, black like me. And, of course, I'm a very light-skinned African American, so it wasn't exactly like them. But they could see, they could see my heart in that sense, and my heart was black. And so, and there was a kin, and they could see and feel what I experienced as a sense of kinship between them and myself. And we had a beautiful day of kinship in the countryside. Just being women together, laughing and joking, being concerned about the same things, and so that was a time of togetherness. And I did not feel, how can I put this? I did not feel that they felt themselves superior or inferior. I felt that in that day, in that time, as we related to one another, we were sisters, and that's what they kept saying. As they held their arm against my arm, they said, sisters. And that was the reality that I was feeling, that we were sisters, that we are all sisters in a way, sisters and brothers under the skin. We are sisters and brothers under God, but we don't always understand ourselves that way. So that was a time for me of understanding that there is no difference. We are all human beings together. We all face the same kinds of struggles. And as in the Bible, the time is different and the place is different, but the underlying feelings are often the same. That's what makes the Bible a universal book. And that was the way I felt in that experience of being in the Congo. That I was, while I was there, and as we were being together in that moment, we were above the fray because we were related. We had a kinship.
Wow. And that, I can just feel the beauty and the sistership in that, to be embraced You're standing in the same space and time together, knowing that you had miles between you because of, you know, where you're from and you know, what brings you to that point in time right then and there. It has to feel like it's appointed by God. So I am, you know, I could just continue this conversation. I cannot believe that we only have 6 minutes left, but this has been a very wonderful and enlightening time. And so I want to give you the opportunity to let our listeners know, you know, what is your source of direction and strength in for sound thinking in this convoluted world? When we look at the landscape of the world right now, you know, how do you stay rational and where do you draw that rationale from?
You have to have God as your source and your salvation. The Lord is my strength and my salvation. Why should I be afraid? You know that in the long run, or I believe that in the long run, everything is ordained by God. Even the bad things, man does the bad things to other men. We do things to each other, and God allows that. But in the end, we come to our senses also by God and by the grace of God. So how do I maintain my balance and perspective in the midst of all that goes on in the world? By faith and by prayer, and by feeling deep within myself that I am part of God's meaning. And because I'm part of God's meaning, I have an obligation to respond to the experiences that I have in a godly fashion to the extent that I'm able.
Now, you just hit the nail on the nose for me when you said respond, because I'm receiving your answer and then I'm thinking up another question, okay? And that question was, how does one put what you're saying into action? And then you hit the nail on the nose. You said in your response. That is key right there. We can take it all in, but how we respond to everything that's going around, how we respond to all the energy from so many different angles, be it family or professional life or the world outside, our inner peace is pivotal for us to maintain a sound mind, body, and spirit. Now, for our listeners, you know, what should we expect? What can we expect? You're newly retired. You have a wealth of knowledge and information. Will you be doing anything in the nonprofit sector or maybe authoring another book or two? Or what can our listeners expect from you coming down the pipeline, Dr. Yvonne Sion?
Well, I have been saying all along that what I need is time to do the writing that I want to do, and that's what I have asked God for. So what you can expect is that I'm going to have to be more consistent and more faithful to that plan of getting those two books, there are two of them now, getting those two books written and published.
Wow. Now, do you want to tell our listeners any titles or hint around to the content?
I can tell you what they are about. One of them is the story of my time in the Congo, which was pivotal in my life, but I thought it was also it was also important in terms of what's happening in Africa and how Africa is going to go into and going into its the independence of various countries and becoming truly independent. So I'm excited to write the story about my time in the Congo and what I learned from that. And the other book is more of a faith-based thing. It's called, I have a tentative working title for it. It's about the the things that my children have said to me that had spiritual content, spiritual meaning, and so it's called a primitive theology. So that's the work.
Wow. Wow. Profound, very profound. Well, I will definitely be on the lookout for your works. I will be in touch with you, and you are welcome to definitely, we need to stay in touch with each other. I know that Mr. Bruce George, the founder of Genius is Common, would love a video from you expressing your genius. But in the event that your writing keeps you from being able to do that, can you tell our listeners, and this is off script because I didn't think about putting it on there, what is your genius?
Interesting. What is my genius? I think what I said before about being open and to others and listening to the things that are said around me, listening to other people's points of view, I think that is my genius, the ability to listen. And I thank God for that.
And I thank God for you. And I thank our listeners for tuning in to The Woman at the Well. I'm Beverly Black with Dr. Yvonne Sion. Until May 29th at our regularly scheduled time of 5 p.m. Pacific Standard, 7 Central, 8 Eastern, right here on Tribe Family Channel, where my guest will be Ms. Esther Austin. I will see you then. You can follow this studio program at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. And you can Google Dr. Yvonne Sion, S-E-O-N. If you have any questions or messages that you would like to get to her, feel free to email me at tribefamilychannel@gmail.com, and I will screen through your messages and determine the importance and relevancy as to whether I can pass them on or not. And that is keeping it as real as I can, because that's what it's all about, being honest and true to who we are. So Dr. Yvonne Sion, I can honestly and say unequivocally, being true to who I am honored to have had this discussion with you. So thankful for your time and your energy and your wisdom. And I want you to be well always. Let me know if you need anything in regards to whatever it is you set your mind and hand to, as the publisher of Gumbo for the Soul Publications and as the founder of Gumbo for the Soul International, in which Tribe Family Channel and The Woman at the Well nest under. So until
thank
we
you
talk
so much.
Again,
thank
absolutely.
You so much.
Thank you so much. Any final words of wisdom for our listeners before we end the show?
I am so glad that you are doing this, because one of the things that I realize is that we have to tell our stories so that the young people of today will have something to help guide them to their reality.
Absolutely. And I thank God for this time. I thank God for The Woman at the Well. I thank him for opening my eyes, my ears, and my spirit to search deeper for a understanding and a level of relationship with him that supersedes anything man can ever say or print for me to pass off as, you know, my spiritual I don't even know what to put there, but, you know, being on that fence of my faith, you know,
yes.
Just that spiritual hold, what am I holding on to spiritually? It's all still unfolding. It's like a flower. It's still coming to its fullness. And so I want to thank you for being here and being part of my awakening. And God bless you and keep you until we talk again, all right?
Bless you as well. Thank you so much for this.
And God bless you as well. Thank you, and God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.